Single Greatest Choice podcast, where we dive into the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and choice. I'm your host, Katie B. Every episode, I'll deliver conversations with women in their fertile years who are grappling with what to do when life doesn't turn out as planned. You will also hear interviews with experts in the fields of fertility, personal development, choosing single motherhood, and more. Join us as we explore these topics and support each other along the way. Because what you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Today we're going to hear from Brenda, a single mother by choice who came to the decision when the alarm on her biological clock started blaring all of a sudden. Brenda is now the mother of 10-year-old twins, and she shares with us the important role that other women, women she refers to as mentors, played in her journey. A small disclaimer, Brenda and I casually discuss some statistics in this episode. Then we talk about why statistics aren't always that important to your individual situation, and then we discuss even more statistics. I want you to know that neither one of us are researchers or experts in this field. I haven't fact-checked any of these numbers, so just take them with a grain of salt. I will have episodes that are more information-based, but the purpose of this episode is for you to hear, relate to, learn from, and enjoy the journey of one badass single mama. So please enjoy. Hi, Brenda. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast. If you wouldn't mind just kind of walking us through who you are and where you are and how all of this relates to you.
I started the TTC trying to conceive when I was 37. I was training for a half Ironman. I was in the best shape of my life. I was dating a much younger hot guy that was never going to go anywhere. And I went in to my regular checkup and the doctor told me I had to have a hysterectomy now or never. So babies now or never. I'd never been married. And that was just a shock. I didn't have to have chemotherapy or radiation, but I did need a hysterectomy. So I went through this really long, like 6 to 9 months, soul-searching process of, is that okay for a baby just to have one parent? Is that selfish? Because I come from a divorced family of the 80s. And my only reference of a single mom was my own mother. And I ended up kind of taking care of and helping raising my younger brother and sister. So when I was younger, I wasn't ready to have kids because I was still growing from that experience. So it was really this thing of, gosh, should I even do that? And I talked to a lot of people and a lot of friends. And I had good information, good advice. And I kind of just got the ball started rolling, even though I wasn't 100% sure. I wanted to go in and get my day 3 test done and see where I stood. And then the other thing with my journey is every 3 months, I had to have screening done. And if they found any cells after the first 2 surgeries, they were going to do the hysterectomy then and there, whether I got pregnant or not. It was like, if they found cells, done, barren, old maid.
Wow, that is a different kind of story from some of the others where it's a gradual buildup to hearing that ticking clock. And for you, it sounds like the alarm went off all of a sudden and you were kind of unprepared for that.
And I did have a very good friend make the point of, make sure this isn't just a decision you're making out of fear or emotion. Mm-hmm. And I really did take that to heart. And I read several books. I read Jane Matheson's book and I read Vicki Morissette's book. Louise Sloan has a wonderful book called Knock Yourself Up. So every time I read any of those books, it really made me feel like these women are like me. You know, at first it was like this boo-hoo, why me? And then that why me musing kind of turned into a of course it's me mantra. Because I think a lot of us as SMCs, we're kind of hard on ourselves. Mm-hmm. People look at us differently. Why aren't you married? But, you know, I had run ultra marathons. I'd done plumbing under my house. I wrote a grant for an early childhood literacy program. I put myself through college. I had a great career and good friends. I owned a home since I was 27. So, of course, it's me. Of course, I'm going to do this by myself.
Right. Yeah, I can really relate to once that idea is in your head, turning to literature and just looking around for other examples of women who've made this choice and just, you know, trying to do the sanity check. Like, is this a thing? Like, is this a thing that people are doing on purpose? It sounds like you found it even in, you know, a decade ago almost.
What was so interesting and isolating to me though is I didn't know anyone whose cousin's boss's neighbor had been an SMC. Like there was nobody that I could even seven steps of Kevin Bacon figure out somebody who's done this before. And so it did make me feel like, is this a thing? And this was before the pop culture with the movies came out even. And those books, you know, even though I'd read them, I knew about Single Mothers by Choice, I decided I wasn't going to go to a meeting until I was pregnant. And one thing that sticks out in my mind, when I was with this running group, which was a lot of empty nesters, I had read at some point that 18% of women 40 and older never get married. And that made me feel like, wow, that's like one in five. I'm not as big of a freak as I thought I was. And just recently, I was reading that 20% of women with college degrees never get married. So there is something about this group of us where we are kind of dynamic, contemporary, empowered, whether we're trying to figure it out on our own or whether we know other women who are doing it. So there is this real kinship and I think sisterhood. And what I love about the Single Mothers by Choice groups and the Choice Moms is once these women had their babies, they could have moved on to mommy groups, different groups, but what they felt and what I feel in, you know, my soul is anyone who's single and going through this process is going to struggle. You know, IVF itself or IUIs, it's just an emotional roller coaster. And the reason I think the women with children stick around is because their lives are so full and so joyous. And there are challenges, but I think we want that for the younger us. We want to help them. And there's this phrase I kind of use where, you know, if somebody's up ahead of you on the ladder, they can reach their hand back down and help you up it. Mm-hmm. And then you find after a couple of cycles of IVF or IUIs your own, you then start mentoring the thinkers. So, you know, there's thinkers and triers and mothers. And it's just been, in our culture, I just never saw any shaming. No cattiness, no mom shaming. We're all similar, but all very different in our parenting styles or how we decide to go about this. And it's just, community is so important when you're doing something that's such a niche kind of out there from societal norms.
Right, definitely. And I think you're right that commonality of having made this choice and really just being the type of person who would make this choice is unifying even when there are some pretty significant differences. I mean, I've talked with women who became a single mother by choice and they never wanted to be partnered. Or I think you mentioned, you know, you had the desire to be partnered, but then after you had your children, that wasn't as strong. Is that correct?
It's really interesting because my OB oncologist had just had her second child at 38 and I was soon to turn 38. And she honestly told me her husband could have fallen off the face of the planet once she had her babies. And I think it's from the very moment I decided I was going to do this on my own. And I've never been a man hater. And I don't think that's true of any of the SMCs. I think it's just we tried long enough and now I'm doing it. Sisters doing it for themselves. So from the minute I decided to try and have babies on my own, I have not felt lonely. And I was the woman in her 30s that every 3 months would watch Bridget Jones with, you know, a quart of chocolate ice cream and a good bottle of Pinot Noir and just have a crying boohoo me every 3 month party. But in between that, I was fine.
Right.
But, you know, I was clearly missing something. And what I didn't realize, and I wish I would have put the pressure off myself when I was younger, is that it really wasn't the husband I needed or wanted. It was the children, because I haven't been lonely since and I don't want to date. And I think that leads to another important point as far as younger women thinking about freezing their eggs. I had a pediatrician colleague of mine who their engagement was broken off. She was 34. And, you know, she knew my situation. We had lunch together lots of times. And when it came down to it, she just felt like if she froze her eggs, it was giving up.
Oh, I've heard that before too.
Or it was too much money. I will tell you, it took me $135,000 tax deductible dollars to get these two children versus a $5,000 egg freeze. But for me, when I was 35, I wasn't ready to do it on my own. I hadn't heard about it. I hadn't seen it. I hadn't felt it. I was still really chasing the dream of the nuclear family.
Right. And, you know, I've been in a place for the last 2 years, I would say, of realizing that I still want both, right? I want a partner and I want a baby, but the separating of those two things has been so incredibly liberating to me.
The pressure's off.
Yes.
If you're a 35-year-old woman and you're doing eHarmony or Match.com or Bumble or any of these things, men run from you. They hear your clock. You know, a lot of people on internet sites have just broken up with somebody. They are not about to in the next year say, I love you, let's get married and have a baby right now. Right. So I think about this relationship I was in, and I don't regret ending any of them, but I did kind of give it a year. And at the end of the year, I was like, you know what, done, moving on, because I don't have time. Mm-hmm. And if I had frozen eggs, I could have gotten pregnant when I was 45. You know, you have just as likely of a success using donor eggs or embryos or your eggs when you're older. So it's really just the egg quality that diminishes over time. But I think I did read in Jane Mattis's book, Single Mothers by Choice, you can't afford to, but you can't afford not to.
That is great advice. That's something that I've thought about a lot, and the idea of kind of diminishing returns, because I think I'm at an age where the year I turned 30 is the year that egg freezing became non-experimental. So I think that was 2012.
And that was the year I started trying to get pregnant. So it was like science hadn't caught up with your older sisters who were SMCs yet.
Right, right. And so, you know, I knew about it. I heard about it. I don't think I knew anyone who had done it, but I kind of knew it was a possibility. And I always had that I can't afford it mentality. But I think if I'd really questioned myself at, let's say, 34, 30, even 35, about what would you be willing to give to ensure that you will be a mother, it would have been anything, it would have been everything. And the cost benefit analysis didn't match up when I was 32, 33. It was too much money to spend on something that I might not need.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening was I did freeze eggs at 37. And at 37, I was able to get 7 eggs. And I was very lucky, because even though my quantity was low, my quality was really high, and I got some good embryos from that. But if I had frozen eggs when I first thought about it, I might have had triple the number of eggs to work with for the same price.
Right.
So that's something to think about. You know, if you know that it's something you do down the road, if push came to shove, then maybe do it now.
And I think, you know, the science has improved. The AMH levels, we didn't have those. So we just had like follicle count and estrogen level on day 3. And I would encourage any woman who's thinking about it, because it really is a thing. You hit 35 and your odds go down and down and down and down. And there are alternatives. You know, you can use donor eggs, which are extremely expensive. I use donor embryos. But what I would encourage women to do is just go to their OB on your third day of your period. They do an ultrasound, they do some blood tests, and then you have an idea where you're at.
Definitely. One of my biggest soapboxes is, we've got to stop looking at statistics. I mean, statistics are useful to a certain extent, but it does not matter that there are women who are 45 getting pregnant, and it doesn't matter that women in their early 30s sometimes struggle. It only matters what's happening inside your own body. So you go get your own numbers. You're driving yourself crazy by paying attention to what's happening for everybody else.
But I think going through the process, at least I had false hope. Which meant that if you're 38 to 40, you only have a 15% chance of a live birth. And I would encourage women to look at the CDC, Center for Disease Control, artificial reproductive technology site for individual clinics, because I thought I was going to get pregnant the first time, so I chose the closest one. And it ended up that clinic did not have good statistics. But also, I only had a 15% chance of a live birth. You don't want to look, so your numbers go down, right? And you can calculate from your retrieval, if you do IVF, from your retrieval to whether they fertilize, to whether they make it 3 or 5 days, to whether they implant, and if you get a pregnancy, and then the live birth. So the number you want to look at is not cycles or transfers, it's number of live births. And I only had a 15% chance. But I had worked at City of Hope with children that had cancer. And a lesson I learned is I'm the 15%. I don't care if it's 85% unlikely. I'm the 15%. But when you're gambling with that kind of money, you know, I'm not sure you should go all in on a 15%. So part of my regret, I really would have wanted to do a couple cycles with my own eggs, which I did too with very vanilla protocols. And then I switched clinics and I found out I had some thyroid issues and some clotting issues, and I did all kinds of crazy things. And then two more cycles and I didn't even get pregnant once. So that's four cycles without a pregnancy. So I think without that false hope and maybe taking a good hard look at those numbers, I still would have tried, but I really would have asked my doctor some harder questions.
Yeah, I feel the same way about IUI. I feel like my doctor, I switched doctors in between the fourth and the fifth IUI, but it did feel like that was kind of an indefinite thing that they were just willing to keep going with that. And it was getting honest, not just with the odds of it actually working, but also starting to think through what was my ultimate goal. And my goal was not to be pregnant right that minute. It was, I want to preserve the ability to have a family. And to me, a family meant more than one child. So IUI, even if it had worked, would have been still scary, because by the time I went through pregnancy and you know, hopefully a healthy pregnancy and not a miscarriage, but we didn't know because we didn't know what egg quality we were working on.
Yeah.
But then on the other side of that, it's possible that by the time I got through pregnancy and postpartum, that I wouldn't have been able to ever have a second. So that first pregnancy could have prevented my ability to have a second. So really, IVF always made more sense for me to preserve embryos and eggs. And I just didn't see it that way. I didn't have a doctor who could walk me through that.
Right. I think there's something that people also don't realize, because in our pop culture, again, you know, women are having babies that are 47 years old. Your chances of a live birth with your own eggs at over 42, I think, are 4%. So you really do want to not take this anecdotal, well, Charlize Theron's pregnant, you know.
Right, because we don't know what treatments they've had. They may have frozen their eggs. They may be using donor eggs. We don't know.
And then the other thing I want to throw out there is, I remember this from a long time ago, the average couple doing it the fun way, if the woman is 38 years old, it takes 2 years to get a viable pregnancy. Mm. So if you're doing unmedicated IUIs and you're 38, how is your emotional stamina going to put up
right.
with that?
And it's so interesting, because you just quoted that statistic and immediately my brain went, oh, but you know, my best friend is 38 and just like kind of accidentally got pregnant with her husband. And that's what we want to do. Like, we want to throw
it's that false hope.
Yeah. Throw examples against the statistics to kind of disprove them. And that's kind of my point, is it really does not matter how many women can or can't get pregnant at a certain age. It really only matters what your own fertility situation is.
Right. And so what you want to do is that like 3-day meet and greet and see where you're at. And also, I think like the PGD has been another huge advancement as far as, you know, I had beautiful looking embryos, not very many of them. I never made freezing, but I didn't have enough that they would do PGD. I think you have to have 3 or 4 really good looking embryos before they'll risk it. I think I heard in your podcast earlier, which I love, by the way, that was kind of a turning point for you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Because I know I have 5 PGD normal embryos, and the odds of each one of those, you know, becoming a live birth, should I transfer them, is 70%. So that's way more kids than I ever want to have in my life. So it really gives me room to breathe, you know, and that's just something I did not know was possible. From the minute that clock started ticking, I just thought, this does not end until I'm an exhausted single mom with a crying baby, you know?
Yeah.
So I love that. I still want to be that exhausted single mom with a crying baby, but I get to do it on my time instead of this false. Oh, I mean, the clock is real, but
yeah,
it's different for each one.
If you've ever sat in a waiting room of an RE, the tension in there is unbearable. Mm-hmm. Like, by the time you've done a couple cycles, there's a desperation about it where you're Alice and you're going down the rabbit hole and mm-hmm. you're not given a lot of information or guidance. And that makes it even more of an anxious experience. So mm-hmm. I do think doing something earlier than later, as far as where are you at and how long do I have and what do I want to do in my future? Do I want to have a husband? Do I want to maybe not get married, but have a companion? Lots of options.
Yes. I want to take us back a little bit. This is all so great and so much helpful information. And I want people to just get to know you a little bit more. So we've kind of alluded to IVF and the fact that you have two children. But will you just tell us a little bit more about your story and how you ended up with those beautiful kiddos?
Yeah. So this is fun and fantastic. After the four cycles with my own eggs, I was at a single mothers by choice meeting, and it was a fun meeting at a Mexican restaurant. And this is where the concept of donor embryos came up. I went on this website called Miracles Waiting. I found a single mother by choice on there who had a four-year-old boy and had decided her family was complete. So she, knowing that single women, it's hard to adopt, wanted them to go to another single woman. So we emailed back and forth, and I sent her a picture of my dog, and she said, I'll trade you the embryos for your doggy. You know, she wanted to meet me. So I flew across the country and I stayed at their home with her and her four-year-old. And it seemed like a 3-day blind date, but she really just reminded me of my single mother by choice mentors at home. And so in the end, I was competing with 19 other women. She did choose me. I did cycle 5 with these donor embryos and had a chemical.
Oh, goodness.
Cycle 6 was the only time I didn't have a triple stripe in my uterus. And the nurse was like, we need to cancel. And I'm like, there's no coming back from this.
Will you explain for the listeners what you mean by triple stripe?
Yeah. So there are a bunch of different things. If the stars align perfectly, you're going to get pregnant. And really, no one thing is more important than the other. They want to see your estrogen rising. They want to see your follicles growing. They want to see your uterine lining, the blood there thickening so it can support an embryo, be a cozy little home. When you go through IVF, you obsess about all these details. So this was the one, you know, after 6 cycles, I was just exhausted. So we went for it. They put 2 embryos in, and I got my son and daughter, Charlotte and Henry, which is very exciting because if you now connect the dots, I don't think I told you that the woman who gave me these embryos used donor egg and donor sperm. And so she's not genetically related to that 4-year-old boy or my children. And I'm not genetically related to that 4-year-old boy or my children. But we got to carry them. I got to breastfeed for 22 months. And those little guys look like me. There's something called epigenetics that you can look into that's just fascinating about who carries these embryos. But that boy is their full sibling.
That is amazing. And it's so cool that you got to meet him before you got to meet your own kids. Like you kind of got a little.
I was going there to meet my future baby's brother and mother. It's insane. Yes, so then this one last thing. They came to visit at Christmas time while I was pregnant. And we do see each other once every year, 2 years. We went to his bar mitzvah 2 years ago. And my kids, they know the story and they call him brother by another mother.
So do you have information about your children's egg donor and the sperm donor, or you just know?
Yeah, okay. The woman who gave me the embryos, she gave me all those files as well.
Okay. That's quite a story. So I've spoken with women who are in that stage where they've done a few rounds of IVF and maybe are considering, is it time to start thinking about donor eggs or donor embryos? And I think the fear, you know, the thing that you hear come up first is, what if I don't feel the same about them as I would about a child that was born from my own egg? Or what if I, you know, transitioning to a reality that you never thought was going to be how you became a mother. And so I'm wondering if you could maybe speak some words of wisdom or comfort or just kind of share how that feels for you.
So when I was kind of looking into adoption and thinking about that as well, I questioned myself. I, like a lot of SMCs, had dog babies first. Some people have cats, some people have dogs. Mm-hmm. When I lost my old English sheepdog named Barkley, and I had some idea for the 6 months prior that I was going to lose him, I couldn't work for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Like I was a puddle on the floor. You know, to feel that much unconditional love towards a pet, when you carry a baby or adopt a baby, it's the same. when you're a mother, you would walk through fire for your baby, whether they're genetically related to you, whether you carry them, they are an extension of your body. You know, when I said that I couldn't probably take care of a special needs child or more than one baby, you know, then come the twins, right? And then the other thing that happened when my daughter was 15 months old is she was diagnosed with a super rare form of cancer that only 20 kids in the whole country get every year. And she went through 6 cycles of chemotherapy and 5 surgeries. And without the SMCs and the twin moms, people always said, you know, oh, you have twins, you have your hands full. And I always say, better full than empty. And then when people say, my God, how did you get through that by yourself? And I say, I was never alone. Like, even if it was emails or a forum, I think this is a really special community. And I didn't have family around. And I think one thing you probably may not understand from your own childhood or your own parents, this is a different kind of generation of parenting and mothering. It is a love that nobody can even describe to you. It has to be felt. And that's why I think we're kind of predetermined to want to have these babies in our lives. I actually had somebody say to me, why don't you just adopt? You know, like only husbands and wives should have babies. Because
I've gotten that question too.
It's a symbol of their love. No, I can have a baby as a symbol of my love too.
Right. And sometimes it's just a symbol that somebody had too many margaritas, you know?
And what, were these people that made kind of questioning remarks that weren't so thoughtful, were they close to you? Were they strangers? Was it all kinds of people?
It's been kind of all kinds of people. I mean, the adoption thing, I think it's, for some reason, it comes up really naturally for a lot of people, well-meaning people. And the response I always have is, I don't know. Why didn't you and your husband adopt, you know, and kind of turn it around on them. And then they realize, oh, right. For a lot of reasons, you know? And it's so interesting because I have actually always thought I might adopt, but I always imagined that with a partner. I really stopped considering adoption only when I realized I will likely be doing this on my own. So it's kind of a reversal. I mean, I love the idea of adoption, but having been in education my whole career, and especially in education with students with special needs, there's just a really kind of disproportionate number of students who are adopted who have like really high needs. And that could be skewed from my career and just what I see in my day-to-day life. It's kind of like how the locksmith thinks everybody's an idiot because all they ever do is help people who've locked themselves out of places. So I saw all of these kids who've been adopted who just had such intense needs. And of course, you know, I loved them as their teachers and I could see how much their parents loved them, but I just thought that is so much to do on your own, kind of, you know, same place you were with.
Exactly.
Considering taking on a child who has needs that are beyond your ability to care for. And that could happen and has happened in, you know, in your story.
And then I have now, you know, when she was going through chemotherapy, she had a G tube and she had, she wears hearing aids because the chemotherapy damaged her hearing. But I think the difference in our perspective, right, is you're where I was at. But I've talked to the kids, and I already am outnumbered, right? But I think about in the future, maybe adopting another child, because we have this wonderful organization called ECHO Parenting, and they're nonviolent parenting. And I was able to go to a 3-day conference on fast adopt systems. And you're exactly right. A lot of those kids have PTSD. They have sensory issues. They are very high needs kids. And it's a lot of emotional regulation. Mm-hmm. But now I kind of feel like I do have the tools and I am equipped that I could have help a child like that. But it took coming through the other end of it to get there.
And how old are your children now?
They just turned 10.
Okay. Yeah. So they're kind of at an age where, of course, you're the parent and you would be the one doing the caretaking, but they could also be sort of role models and supports for a child who needed some behavior modeling or emotional support. I think that it would be a really healthy environment for a struggling child to come in and have kind of instant family instead of just this one adult woman who loved and cared for the child, but isn't a kid, you know, versus having family, other children in the house and toys and movies and games and all of that.
Yeah. And because of Charlotte's cancer diagnosis, I have been through like 200 hours of parent education. And it really is about like co-regulating. I think with the right resources, it is, I think, a challenging system.
Mm-hmm. So thinking about those women who are still on the fence or just not sure, what are some of the things that you wish you'd known earlier or advice that you might give them if they're just thinking about whether this would be a good path for them?
I would just reiterate, make an appointment, go see where you're at fertility-wise. And the second thing would be, it doesn't mean you have to give up on relationships. You know, you can have your baby. They could be adopted by a man or a woman at some point in your life or not. You could also in the future potentially adopt with your partner. Another thing I would recommend, you know, Single Mothers by Choice is an international community. So a lot of cities have local meetings where you actually go and see what it looks like. The other thing is on Instagram, there's a really nice community of supportive women, and that is hashtag Single Mother by Choice. I saw an episode of this fun show called Tiny Houses last night with my kids, and the person had asked them what their friends and family thought, and they said, well, we haven't told anyone. And this is kind of how I am. On my big decisions, I may ask advice, but I want that decision to be mine. Mm-hmm. And so in this ubiquitous area of not a lot of women are doing this, we all come from different backgrounds, I would get your information from other women who've done it or are doing it versus your friends who are saying, why don't you adopt? Because even my pediatrician friend was like, everyone who does IVF has a baby. I'm like, that's not true. And she's
definitely
like, but there are all these kids in my kid's school that were IVF babies. I'm like, well, the couples who didn't have babies aren't in your school.
You know, right. Seems kind of obvious, right?
Yeah. So books, there are wonderful books out there. I think parenting is a struggle, whether you're single, married, partnered, whether you have one baby or five, but it's also the biggest joy in my life. My life started the day I had them. And my gut says, if you're thinking about it, you should just do it.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that about the parenting. And I'd love to hear more, because I think this area, it's kind of like, you know, there's the wedding and then there's the actual marriage. And I think we get kind of focused on the trying to conceive and the IVF and that, like, how do I actually have a baby? Because we have to think about it in a way that someone who's coupled doesn't. Like, we're not going to accidentally get pregnant as an SMC probably. Yeah. So, you know, there's really this fixation on the getting pregnant and not necessarily the being a mother. So tell us a little bit more about what it's really like to be a mom of 10-year-old twins.
I kind of call it La Vida Loca, which, you know, is the crazy life. Twins are difficult. I always say I wouldn't wish it on anyone. I wouldn't change it for the world. Mm-hmm. I am really lucky because my kids have two very different personalities. So it's not like I'm getting double teamed with a carbon copy. I have different ways of dealing with them, and they have, you know, different temperaments. I think during the newborn years, because I was breastfeeding and I didn't think I'd be able to, I was 41 when I had them, and I stockpiled formula. I worked in pediatrics, so it was important to me, and I carpooled with a lactation consultant for 2 years. Mine were born a little earlier, so I pumped for a long time, and then I had stopped pumping at a year. They still nursed at a year, and then when Charlotte was diagnosed with her cancer, I ramped it back up, so I was able to breastfeed her through her treatment and stopped when they were 22 months, which was never my plan. And this is the funny thing about life, and I think it's the same thing with pregnancy, delivery, parenting. Don't write down your pregnancy delivery plan in ink. Otherwise, you get really disappointed. You know, the first preschool you choose may not be the right one for your family. It's just, you just kind of, it's like Dory and Finding Nemo. You just keep swimming. But I'm really proud of the mother I've become. And I wrote this book called Kindness Among Us, which is about community surrounding my 6 cycles of IVF and Charlotte's 6 cycles of chemotherapy and how we got through it. I have plans for a second book called Gifts Born of Suffering. Somehow, if you're in a safe zone your whole life, there's not a lot of growth. But when you go through struggle, like not having a partner or IVF or being a single mom, it really gives you a different perspective on life. You know, I'm very able to stay present in the moment and really enjoy all the ups and downs and all the nuances of my children. I can't live in the past. I don't know what the future is going to hold. So this is what we have today. The joy I feel around having these two kids and the things they do on a daily basis that just make me laugh. It's amazing. I understand why you would want to have two, because they've always played together. They are such good friends. And I hope that continues through the teenage years. But it's just a joy and a pleasure to see the kind of children that they've become. And, you know, the studies that used to lump us all into single moms in one group and how our kids were not going to do well in school and emotionally, you know, now they have pulled out and teased out these single mothers by choice and socioeconomic and economic levels and how those kids do. And I got to say, if you have one solid parent who has a clue of what they're doing, who's reading books about what to do, who's asking friends, you're far more better off than two parents who have conflicting ideas of how they're going to parent or who are arguing in front of the kids. So I think when I go back to thinking about whether I should have done this or not, absolutely 100%. I have no regrets.
That's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing all of that. I'm wondering, would you be comfortable talking about feedback you've gotten from your children about, like, how do they think about or feel about being donor conceived or having a single mother by choice?
So they started drawing and saying the word embryo at like 2.5. Like, it's just always been part of our story. It's interesting. Only one time we were at the aquarium and the kids were not even 2 yet. And it was a Volkswagen Bug and a guy was getting in it across the way. And Henry said, "Daddy?" And my babysitter laughed and, "No, we don't have a daddy." And that was the only time. And, you know, when I asked them about it growing up, the truth is having a husband would take time away from them and it would take my energy away from them. And I think it would be different if I ever had like the stellar relationship. But because I've never had that, I just don't know that I want to risk my like emotional well-being on dating or spreading myself too thin.
Right.
It's interesting because Henry played soccer and was in a kindergarten class with a little boy. And I've talked to them, you know, a ton. And it wasn't for 2 years that the dad finally goes, "Where's the dad?" And it's so strange that people are so nervous to offend people. I actually am developing this brand for single moms, these graphic t-shirts where they're icebreakers, giving you permission, you know, to ask me. So like I have one that says "Solo Mama, No Drama." Like, so if I'm at the grocery store and there's no ring on my finger and you see me wearing this shirt with a little kid and you're my neighbor, you know, tell me about that shirt.
Right.
And I have one that's like a white t-shirt with sprinkles on it and a frosting font, and it says "Alternative Family, Same Love." And it's just this positive, you know. So I do want to have a more positive kind of societal opinion and view of single mothers by choice. Yeah, there were a lot of SMCs in my group that were mentors that were very open about using donor eggs. And there were some who it was like, "Don't ask, don't tell." But for me, from the second I decided to do donor embryos, since it was such an out there kind of thing to do, I have been an open book. You know, people I work with, my family, other single mothers by choice. Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to kind of start to wrap up here. But before we go, is there anything we haven't talked about that you really want to make sure that women hear?
Not that I can think of. It's kind of a lot.
We did talk about a lot. Okay, then before we go, a couple of things. One, you mentioned a book that you're working on. And just so listeners know, it has not been published yet, correct?
That's correct. I'm in the process of putting together a pitch package. I have 5 chapters in the can. It's written, but it's called "Kindness Among Us" is the working title. And it's just about women in community and mentoring and how they helped us through it.
Okay. So if you're listening in real time, you won't be able to read it yet, but in the future, Brenda, when it's finished and it's published, if you want to give me information that I can put into the show notes, that way, if you're listening to this and it's 2021 or, you know, sometime in the future, you can look down in the show notes and get the information for the book. And then also, if people want to connect with you and see more about you and pictures of your adorable kids and all of that, where can they find you?
So you can see La Vida Loca at Instagram, and it's at Not Nuclear Families.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all of that with us.
This has been fun. And again, if you're thinking about it, take some baby steps, get some information. And if you're thinking about it, you want it.
Yes. I love that you called it baby steps. Take some baby steps towards your baby. Yes. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn about me and this project on my website, singlegreatestchoice.com. That's also the place to go if you're interested in being a future podcast guest. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.